I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So my next interview is with a politician. He is a local town councilor in Oakville, Ward 5. He's running in the municipal election coming up in the next little while, and I saw it as an opportunity not only to get his message out, but also just to talk about community service, about doing good and about giving back. He's a local entrepreneur. His name's Jeff Noel. And lots of information about him online. He's out on the street canvassing, and you'll see that he is not really interested in partisan politics. And he talks a great deal about why things at the municipal level work and work really well. He talks about listening and about digesting the things that he hears from people in the community. He talks a lot about libraries and about why there's this sense of practical application at a local level and not quite as much uncertainty and pettiness. We talk about affordable housing and hopeful idealism and even Taylor Swift. So you're going to need to listen in on this one. You're going to enjoy the conversation, I think, for sure. We even touch a little bit, and you'll find out more why as you listen in. We even talk about old theaters. Vaudeville even comes up, for heaven's sakes. But, you know, it's about how that space used to be where people would gather as a community to hear stories, to be entertained, and to get their news and so on. And it's just this great metaphor for this conversation we have coming up. DavidPeckLive.com for more information about my speaking and writing. Face-to-face live for a whole slew of other interviews with really interesting people. A lot of filmmakers coming up. Rabble.ca. And don't forget, you can support what I'm doing through Patreon.com. And also, if you can't do that, you know, financially and get behind what we're doing here at Face-to-Face, I would really appreciate a review on iTunes if and when you get the chance. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening into Face-to-Face. We do appreciate the community out there listening, and we do want to hear from you. So send us a note. And don't forget iTunes for a review. And coming right up, Jeff Noel.
Welcome to Face-to-Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration, collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here today, a local special guest for me and a friend. Jeff Noel is here with us today. He's an entrepreneur. He's a politician, and he's an Oakville resident for some, I don't know how many years now.
20 years.
20 years. Yeah. Jeff, thanks for your time today. I appreciate
it. My pleasure. It's great to be here.
So what has changed in politics since you stepped in through the door back in, was it 2000, when you took on this role as local councillor in Ward 5, Oakville North?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that's changed in politics is, frankly, at the more senior level of politics, where everybody seems to be moving off into the extremes. The right-wingers are more extreme, the left-wingers are more extreme, and it's made for a very interesting political environment, especially at the municipal level, where we're not partisan, and we're trying to navigate those waters of the extremes at both the federal and provincial level. So that's probably, for me, the biggest change that's happened in politics, over the past 20 years or so. It's been a quite a it's been quite an alarming change too. When you look at what's happening internationally in politics, it's because it's the same kind of thing.
Right.
We're very. I mean, I'm very grateful that, you know, at the local level we don't have political parties, and generally the everybody who comes and serves at a local government level is really coming there armed with their own values and views, and that's what makes up the richness and the and I guess the. That's what makes municipal politics work, because it's people are bringing their life experiences, they're bringing their own values, their own ideas, rather than the whipped, partisan principles of a political party. So I'm glad to be here. It's a very safe refuge for somebody in politics.
So how are the extremes playing out for you? Like what might be an example of that?
Well, you know, recently the government in Ontario changed, of course, and so we had a certain idea of programs and philosophies that were entrenched in the Ontario landscape around things like social welfare and housing, and all of a sudden now with the change of government, there's a different view of different value system in the new government, and so we're still, the jury's out. We don't know where that's going to go. So you plan certain programs. I've been very involved in affordable housing, of course, and so there are certain programs that we expected to come to pass, and we're not 100% sure that they're actually going to happen. There's a lot of uncertainty in the world of municipal politics right now, because we don't know where the province is going. Even for that matter, the whole role of governance, you know, there's a very different view of local governance than the previous administration had, and the previous administration before that had, and the administration before that. So but the difference now is that it's very extreme. So we saw what happened in Toronto, where, you know, the new government came in and immediately decided that they were going to, you know, reduce the size of Toronto Council, which has thrown that entire election mm-hmm. and that entire municipality in a degree of chaos, as they contend with the sudden and unexpected reduction of the number of local representatives. And that's fundamentally an ideological construct. It's not necessarily something that the people were asking for, even.
How does it play out on your level? Does it take power away from you? Does it affect you in any from a decision making perspective? Is it what about energy, passion, those kinds of things?
Well, it worries those of us in local government, because we don't know what the next election is going to hold. I mean, we were sort of holding our breath when we saw what's happening in Toronto and saying, you know, we hope it's not going to happen here, because what we have out in Halton and in Oakville really works. We have a great, we have great councils, and we have, you know, great leaders out here that, really care less about the political part of it, and more about the service delivery and the governance and the service part of it. And so I wouldn't want to see us sort of devolve into that kind of environment where it starts becoming more partisan and less cooperative, which is what we have right now. We really have a great cooperative environment.
Jeff, when you say partisan, do you also mean petty to some degree?
To a degree, yeah. I mean, I'm not anti-partisan politics by any stretch of the imagination. I've spent all my life, being involved in a political party, and as a volunteer, I used to be on staff. I've worked at Queen's Park. I've worked for the House of Commons. I've been a political consultant. I've even been a partisan candidate before. So it's when I talk about partisan policy, I'm really talking about not necessarily the partisanship, the litmus test of right versus left versus center. I'm talking about the pettiness and the populism that seems to be permeating politics these days, and that I think is something that leaves a degree of uncertainty for those of us at the local level, because we don't know when the other shoe's going to drop, scenario.
Right.
And now you asked the question. You said, "How does that affect us?" It doesn't. It's not affecting us yet,
right?
But we don't know what's to come. How is it going to affect Toronto? I think is the big question. Fundamentally, what they did in Toronto doesn't offend me. What it offends me is the timing, the concept of realigning wards, the concept of even potentially reducing the number of councillors isn't an offensive concept if it had proper public consultation.
Right.
If the electorate actually were involved in the process and it made sense. And you know what? I think it might make sense. I've been involved in Toronto politics, and there are a lot of politicians. And Toronto Council is a little sluggish when it comes to dealing with the legislature there in the City Hall. And I think it could use a few less, councillors that are all trying to, to get a piece of the debate of whatever's happening in the day. Because it takes a long time to get bylaws and initiatives through that council. There's no question. The fundamentally upsetting part of it is when a government comes along and says, when there's a process already in play, candidates were already raising money, knocking on doors, lining up support, and say all of a sudden, we're going to reset and we're going to change the rules of engagement. And I think how that could affect us in the future if Queen's Park were to do that out here, it'd be services. Like when you reduce the number of councillors, what you're doing is you're reducing the points of service for constituents.
And access.
Access, absolutely. I mean, it's already challenging.
Well, and I think I hear sort of embedded in some of what you're saying is that local. Municipal politics, and I think, you know, we've had a conversation like this at least once or twice before over the years, but it's about getting things done.
Yeah, it really is. And that's
the, and getting things done locally, obviously, but it's very practical. It's about impact.
It really is. And that's one of the things that most, floats my boat, as they say, about municipal politics, because you can literally take an idea and see it implemented by simply lining up seven votes and you know, getting your research done and presenting a cogent case for whatever it is you want to do, whether it's, you know, changing a stop sign or building a new recreation center or opening a library. It's simply a matter of justifying it to your colleagues, justifying it in the public communication sense, and then just lining up enough votes to do it. You want to do anything at Queen's Park or the House of Commons, and you're talking about writing a private members bill. And they never see the light of day for the most part. Periodically they do. So it's very hard to move the ball at that level unless the cabinet and the premier, or in the case of the federal government, the prime minister, wants to move the ball.
So the odds of somebody living in your ward or any ward at a municipal level, that sounds to me like I've got the access as well. I mean, I've certainly got the freedom to come to the meetings and to ask questions and so on, but I can get to you and say, I got an issue with X, and can you help me? And then it's not. I mean, it's obviously going to take time, and there's relationships, and there's decisions that need to be made, and layers, and so on. But it's nowhere near as bureaucratic.
Well, let me give you a great example. Yeah. I'll give you an example of the difference. So many years ago, I worked at Queen's Park, and I worked for a member of provincial parliament that shared similar values to mine, particularly around things like smoking. I'm basically, diametrically opposed to cigarette smoking. I've been fighting it all my life. I lost both my parents to smoking-related illnesses, so there's a personal, grudge against smoking and tobacco-related industries. And so when I got to Queen's Park, my boss of the day, because I was a chief of staff, not an MPP, so I had to work through him, but I really liked the idea of potentially looking at the laws. And when we were looking at the laws, because this was pre Smoke-Free Ontario Act, this is where we are now is a much better place than we were when I was there.
Sure, sure.
People were still smoking in restaurants and in movie theaters and things like that. But when I was looking at the laws, and I was really concerned about the statistics around youth tobacco use, I noticed that I asked the question of one of the legislative lawyers, and I said, I don't see anything here about minimum age for cigarettes, but about smoking. He says, well, it doesn't exist. There's a minimum age to purchase cigarettes, but there's no minimum age to smoke. I'm thinking, that's ridiculous. So when I went out and I spoke to some educators and some principals and such in the community, and I said, how do you enforce this? And they said, well, that's actually a really difficult thing, because sure, we can tell them to get off, they can't smoke on the property, and many high schools have smoking pits, but the reality is that, kids, children are smoking because there is no reason you can't smoke. Like, there's no law against it. You can't give a child a cigarette, you can't sell a child a cigarette, but if that child happens to get the cigarette on themselves, then there's no legal authority to say you can't do that. So that's problematic for educators. It's problematic for anybody that's in the position of trying to impact youth tobacco use. So we wrote a private members bill, and we thought this was a great idea. We're actually going to change the legislation to finally once and for all make cigarette use by children illegal. So it was an additional tool for educators. Well, when we started going through the process, we just got one pushback after another, and there was committees, and eventually just died. A good idea died on the vine after working on it for months and months.
And a really simple idea.
Really, when you think about it.
Yeah, sure, sure.
It sounds simple.
Yeah.
In the town of Oakville, when I got here in 2000, I was elected in 2000, 2001, then Councillor Kurt Franklin approached me and said, you want to work together on a smoking bylaw for town of Oakville and revise it. And we talked about it. We really wanted to work on something that was like really cutting edge, something that would be the gold standard. Only a few cities had really done what we had wanted to do at that time. So we worked with staff, and staff did consultations and spoke to bar owners, and we had a robust public discussion on the issue. But we wrote a bill, or the a piece of a bylaw. The staff wrote the bill, I should say, with our direction, that basically was very restrictive. It talked about, you know, no designated smoking areas in restaurants, and you know, radiuses of smoking from doorways, and a whole range of issues. And it was really good. We were really excited by it. And guess what? It passed. And it didn't take years and months and frustration.
Right,
we were able to take it from the point of, hey, Jeff, do you want to give me a hand with this, to the point of passing it, probably 3 months.
Wow.
So it's, and I, you know, I could be checked on those.
Yeah,
on those,
sure,
but
sure.
It's not well, much different.
No, but what it points to is what's important.
Yeah.
Not the details necessarily, yeah, but the fact that it was something incredibly practical, yeah, smart, safe, and you guys were able to make it, and that's
the most wonderful part of municipal politics, is that we can get things done at that, at the service delivery level.
And Jeff, is that why after 18 years would you want to do it again? You know?
I love it.
Maybe that's a silly question.
Well, but it is such a great feeling to be able to have such an impact on your community, and not just impact on a good wishes basis, but I mean, but impact like on a real basis. So you determine that there are this, well, example. You know, I'm chair of the library board as one of my many jobs at the town, and we determined that we really needed to bring a library to North Oakville, because North Oakville is growing like crazy, right? We have north of Dundas, there's homes sprouting up and new people moving in every day, and
farm fields disappearing.
I mean, it was, and that all started before I got here.
I have to tell you a story of Victoria when she was, I don't know how old she was, 4 or 5. And there was a bit of construction going on, not so much north of Dundas, and we were out driving, and her line was something along the effect that they need to build more fields. And I thought that was a great T-shirt or a great bumper sticker.
It would have been a great bumper sticker, yeah.
Yeah.
But the you know, what we found is that, you know, the services were really starting to fall behind, and the library had, when I joined the library in the capacity I joined it, I was on the board for a while, and the board was basically struggling with an old policy around, you know, library growth, and they had planned on building a branch in Bronte. And I'm sorry for anybody listening from Bronte, but you know, we just didn't feel that Bronte needed another branch. I mean, yeah, there was some growth in Bronte, but they have the new QE Park Recreation Center or Art Center. They've got the Woodside branch, and we just felt, you know what, they have lots of services down there. North Oakville has absolutely nothing. So we were able to, as a board, a small group of us, you know, and I chair the board. We basically changed policy overnight on this. We said, no, we're not doing the Bronte branch. We're not going to build additional branches in well-served areas. We're going to start looking at providing better services and more facilities in the north. And we did it. We, you know, based on the board's initiative, the staff went out and came up with a concept to build, now mind you, just a temporary branch, but it's a temporary branch while we wait for the longer-term capital investment in the North Park facilities to build a permanent branch. But we're going to be starting construction on this modular system very soon, and it'll be open in the early winter or spring of 2019. So this is something that, you know, we saw the need for it. The community was calling for it. We felt that we needed to achieve it. We were able to basically take it from a seed of an idea to actually turning sod a couple weeks ago at the new location. And the satisfaction of being able to accomplish that for a community, I can't even explain the feeling of being able to do that.
There's legacy value there that, you know, and I don't want to overstate, but you know, Elizabeth, my wife, librarian, teacher, yes, my brother, principal,
yes,
I've taught. Yeah. I know the power of reading, the access, the doors that it opens.
It
you
does.
Just you think about the impact you're going to have based on that one, you know, a series of decisions and that way forward for this group of people that you've never even met yet.
That's the piece that's so exciting about this job.
Well, it sounds so crazy idealistic too, and yet so tangible.
Well,
right?
it's idealistic, but it's also really practical. And you were talking about reading, but you know, the other thing that we've done with the libraries, and I know I shouldn't be going off on a tangent about libraries, but I feel so good about what we're doing at the library system, and I'm so dedicated to this organization. But we're converting our libraries from just being a traditional books library. The books will always be there.
Yeah, sure.
And we'll always enhance the
Plato and Aristotle would be thrilled to hear that.
Yeah,
I think.
The books will live forever. And actually, ironically, bookstores and libraries are thriving.
Right.
You know, it's people. There's a full circle now, and the digital stuff is still, you know, perfectly fine. And
sure.
It has its audience, but people are wanting books as well.
I like the paper.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, we're not moving away from books, but what we're doing is we're augmenting the libraries with additional resources that people want. So the library can be a traditional library where somebody comes in and checks out a book or reads a magazine. To being a creation zone. We just opened up, we renovated Iroquois Ridge Library in North Oakville to become a creation zone. And you can go into Iroquois Ridge now, and if you've got a project that you want to model on a 3D printer, you can come and do that. If you want to use a green screen, we have that available for you. If you want to do a podcast, you know, there's a quiet room to do podcasts, and we even got equipment for that.
I wrote my master's thesis at the Iroquois Ridge Library.
Did you really?
I don't know if I've ever told you that.
But no, yeah. You didn't tell me that.
Yeah, went there every day. I treated it like a job. I had an advisor, Andrew Wayne, who was amazing and just so focused. And so I would send him, you know, 10, 12 pages at a time. Yeah. He'd get back to me. But yeah, I went there. It was like a job for 6 weeks. Wrote it in 6 weeks.
But isn't that
that's
a great
marvelous
resource to have in a community?
Oh, it's genius.
And now what we've done
well,
is...
Well, and a pool and a gym and all. And yeah.
It's kind of hard to write in the pool, though.
Yeah. Difficult.
Yeah,
yes.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you need special inks.
Special inks,
but I mean, and special paper.
But think about what you can create and what you can do.
And
how that sets a community up for the future. A friend of mine wrote a book there called "Marooned in Space."
Mm.
Gary Pearson, another Oakville resident, and it's a great science fiction comedy book. But he basically, from what I understand, took his word processor and sat in Iroquois Ridge Library and banged out this really, really funny book.
So many things to talk about, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about some of the challenges too you've faced over the years. But would you call yourself a good listener?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, that's like almost the number one.
You kind of have to be,
job,
don't you?
Yeah. I was going to joke and say, "Pardon me," but you know, it's actually the number one job. I mean, listening is 9/10 of the job, and sometimes
mm-hmm.
I mean, listening to constituents, listening to staff, listening to, you know, people express their point of view, and not just listening, but actually digesting and comprehending what they're saying, and walking in their shoes sometimes
right
to try to understand the perspective that they bring to the table, and that's an important job, especially in, you know, I've been very involved in health and social services. You know, at the region, I've for most of my 18 years on council, I've been either on or chaired health and social services and the Community Housing Corporation, and that requires a lot of listening and understanding and being empathetic and really trying to be able to walk in somebody's shoes. I have no way to understand the perspective of somebody that is a single parent that's struggling to feed their children on social services. I have no perspective. I can't put myself in that space. So it's important to understand when making decisions around people who are in that predicament to be able to listen, comprehend, and be able to, you know, really not just listen to the words, but listen to the intent, listen to the stories, listen to the impacts. And it's something I think I'm good at, and it's something that is literally, it's the one way you can set yourself up for success in this world.
So this is going to sound like I'm selling you, but I've known you a long time. I've known Michelle and the work that you guys do in the community. I don't know two people who are more involved and more connected and who pretty much arrive with their sleeves rolled up.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, this has been a real passion for you guys. It's a family commitment. It's a lifelong commitment. And then maybe unpack a little bit too. I mean, you're an entrepreneur. You love film. You love Disney. I mean, one of the first conversations you and I had was around The West Wing. Do you remember?
I do.
A long time ago when Elizabeth and I arrived, and it wasn't long after that we met.
I got you to watch the show.
Good chance that actually was one of the catalysts for sure. But now it's one of my favorite shows.
And
there's a hopeful idealism there too,
there is,
right?
There is,
there's this group of people who, they may disagree, but at least they're trying.
That's right.
Right? They're trying to move the rock up the hill, and every now and then they got some great successes and lots of failures.
That's
too.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, there's a lot of questions wrapped up in there, but you know, you've got this passion for change. You're an entrepreneur. You run a film. I mean, again, there's another question for you. How do you find time for it all? For crying out loud! Yeah. So, take any of those six questions and answer.
Let's see. Well, I mean, let's talk.
Choose
about,
your weapons.
Let's talk. I mean, I have a big passion for a lot of these issues. Like, I love community service. I spent, you know, a lot of my growing up years following my mother around as a little kid to all the different things that she would support and do, whether it be the church or she got me hooked on helping the Jerry Lewis Telethon when I was a little kid.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I was when I was, I think it was 9 or 10 or something like that, in the early days of the Telethon. Maybe I was a little older, but anyway, it doesn't matter. I was quite young, and my job every Labor Day was to be the runner at Bell Canada in downtown Windsor to run the pledges from the phone banks to the tote guy that would then call with a real phone back in those days, dial probably, would call Detroit where the broadcast was happening. And it was it was fun and it was exhilarating.
No,
and
I bet.
It was part of something really big and yeah. something that was making an impact on people. So, you know, I started out that way, and then I met this wonderful lady that I got introduced to when I moved back to Toronto. She was interested in politics and she was interested in community service, and she shared so many of the values that I shared. And I thought, man, this is like a match made in heaven. It's too bad we didn't like each other at first. But we managed to work that out, and we've shared this life of serving our community in similar ways, but also disparate ways. You know, I mean, I serve as an elected official, and I'm serving in that capacity. She serves as a community worker, social service worker. But often cases, our paths, are intermingled. I'm a big supporter of the agency that she and a group of her friends started up from the ground up, and I was there with you while we were wiring the building. Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess I shouldn't say that. Sorry, ESA, don't listen to this part of the recording. It's something that really means a lot to me. I believe strongly in service. And that's actually one of the things I love about my movie theater too, because that's a big part of what Film.ca Cinemas does as well. We support the community. We don't just operate a business that is all about making money. It's also about giving back to the community. And we have charity events, and every Thursday we have development to the disabled adults and kids that come in for special screenings in the morning when we can keep the lights up and the sound down a little bit. And we have this really cool resource in this building, and it's an experience everybody loves. Everybody loves the movies, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody loves mm-hmm. to laugh and cry and think at the movies. And so having this facility, on a Friday and Saturday night and a Tuesday night, we pack people in, the regular customers, but the rest of the week we have all this capacity, and I love to be able to share that with the community, whether it's Kerr Street or Michelle's agency, Oak Park Neighbor Center. I just hosted a group of senior citizens seniors group at Oak Park Neighborhood Center. They came in and they were so excited to see this movie because they don't get that experience very often, right? So they came to see A Star Is Born, and they were so excited. And I came and talked to them about the election and a little bit about the movie theater business, and they were just, it was so cool to be able to give back to these seniors that have given so much to our community in their lives, that are trying to find ways to connect with one another and have a fun time out and to learn and to to have those healthy experiences. And it just warmed my heart for the rest of the day. I was just so happy I was able to provide that. But the time thing, time is precious, and it's a diminishing, it's a commodity that you can't replace. And I'm very lucky to have Michelle and I have 5 kids, and one of the best parts of having 5 kids is you have a built-in support network.
Mm-hmm.
And we're so lucky that I have our oldest daughter Bryn runs a big part of the theater. I have this one of our neighbors I met years ago actually on the Oak Park Neighborhood Association, which is where we met initially. Jason, he between the two of them, they run the business. Our oldest son has recently become a manager at the theater. He works there. Our second youngest son, Dylan, he runs the entire information technology aspect of it. So they've basically, their time, their commitment and passion for the business has allowed me to spend my time on council and really be at the theater for the strategic stuff and for the popcorn.
Always about the popcorn. By the way, A Star Is Born. Have you seen it?
I have not.
I'm hearing great reviews.
Well, remember
like
what
stellar
I'm,
reviews.
Remember what I'm doing right now.
Yes.
If I could squeeze in a movie, I am going to. I'm going to tell you right now. The one movie I've been looking forward to all year is First Man.
Same.
And
same.
It opened last night, and my Dylan, our second youngest, who is the biggest film critic there is. He doesn't like movies. He loves movies, but he doesn't like them, if you know what I mean. Like, he's so critical of movies. But he texted me at 3 o'clock in the morning. A bunch of the staff at the theater got together and watched the movie We do a quality check on films, and so often the staff will stay and watch it, which is good because then they get to tell customers about it. But he texted me, and I got this text at like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and says, First Man is amazing, or something like that. So it just
that's great.
Yeah. So, and I was at the theater for a few minutes today, and I was there when some of the audience left. So I'm so looking forward to this movie because I'm a space junkie too, right? I love space and particularly the Apollo program.
Science fiction film. Yeah. I love what you said about how you've been able to bring that sort of desire for service. Clearly sounds like it was in your family. Mm-hmm. And there's often a thread there, right? Mm-hmm. When you look back and you say, where does something like that start? It's not ever one thing necessarily. It's a cumulative series of events. But I love how you've taken this business that I know you've struggled with over the years, and this wonderful business, and it's about story, and film for the most part, it's about hopeful idealism, and about love, and about relationships, and about change, and how you brought that together with the work that you're actually doing, the two. You got the business, and almost not quite a social enterprise, but a corporation.
Our accountant might say it's a social enterprise, but I still to this day have not made any money from that business, and we're over 20 years. But it has a piece of that whole social enterprise thing, because I mean, if you think about what we can influence in our community, we can provide access to not just movies, Hollywood movies, but we can provide access to meeting space. We can help usher the next generation of filmmakers into an opportunity to exhibit their films.
Yeah.
And we do that all the time with Sharon in particular. We provide access to them to show their films. We are a film location for our theaters probably appeared in more student films from Sheridan and Ryerson than almost any other location, because we make it available. It's usually at the wee hours of the morning, but we make it available to them mostly at no cost. It's if you think about what we've got to offer, what we can offer, and the fact that they're not widgets, so there's no letting somebody from that doesn't have the money to take their kids to see the latest kids film, letting them sit down and watch the movie, for free. There's no I have to pay the studio their cut, but it's very minimal, and it's something that I otherwise wouldn't sell that seat, but I'm giving that child, that family, an opportunity to experience what other kids are experiencing. So it's an equalizer to a degree too. So when they go to school, they don't have to feel bad that they didn't see the latest Transformers movie or the latest Star Wars movie. And so the pop culture, the cultural experience of being able to share these entertainment experiences, often is something that people that have income, that are economically disadvantaged, don't have that same opportunity. We can often give that to them, and we do it all the time.
I think the theme for our conversation today is access.
Yeah,
you're providing access. Yeah. Film theaters are access. You know what I mean? Libraries are access.
That's true.
It's just kind of interesting.
But the movie theater concept, the way we operate our theater, actually is not new. It actually dates back to the 30s and 40s.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because if you think of history, and you think of almost any old movie about the wartime or any movie that centered on a movie theater back in the 30s and 40s, you'll always notice that they were giving out dishes, or they were doing war bonds, or they were watching newsreels. The theaters were the center of the community. They were the place where you got your news. They were the place you took your first date out. They were the place that you got your entertainment. This is the place the kids entertained themselves on a rainy Saturday afternoon. When the government needed to raise money for the war, they did it at the theater. So the theaters took on this community center feel to them. In small towns, they were called NABEs, NABE, as in neighborhood theaters, and they were the heart of the community. So it was that sort of nostalgic, romantic, piece of that industry that really turned me on to wanting to develop something different.
Vaudeville.
Yeah, well...
Sort of.
That concept.
Vaudeville era.
Yeah, but it's not so much what's on the screen or on the stage.
Sure.
It's more what takes place within the organization.
Well, and what they represented. I mean, interesting, 15, 20 years ago, Adam McGoyan said he thought theaters were the cathedrals of our time.
And
I think there's a whole lot of truth in that. I mean, the storytelling and what's being communicated. And it's, well, it makes a lot of sense to me that that you would align with that. I mean, there's all kinds of other reasons why, but that community center like feel, the relationships, the building up from the building up of others, and the embrace of it, to me is I think a beautiful metaphor. You know, we're gonna have to wrap it up in a couple minutes here, but how do you stay hopeful? You know, and I mean, I would imagine there's a lot of failure. I would imagine there's maybe there isn't, but you know, as a politician, I would imagine there's a lot of desire. There's ideas that get squashed, and even municipally, or what about the naysayers, Jeff? You know, I mean, it's got to be. You know, you're in the middle of this campaign, and I hope you can also maybe even in this weave something in there that's, you know, gonna act as a catalyst for the next generation of young politicians. You know, there's a lot in there again, but
Let's start with your last comment first. And that, you know, something for young politicians or people that want to enter public service at the elected level. You know, I think that what I want to tell anybody that wants to get into it. And I've been coaching this young lady that's running in the new Ward 7. I'm very hopeful for her, joining council with her experience and what she can bring to the table. But I'm very hopeful that you know, young people will consider elected public service as a real calling, a real challenge that they can embrace and with pride and with a sense of accomplishment, rather than the way politicians are being portrayed more and more, right? And that's for me, there is, you know, I am a glass half full guy. I've always been that way. I've had my own challenges in life, around, I lost both parents. I've, my business has almost failed twice. I've had a number of challenges in life, but I've, being a half full guy, always thinking that, that there's better days are ahead, has kept me moving in business, in life, but also in politics. You know, you get defeated a lot, but the thing is that tenacity can lead to success, and being, sticking to your guns on issues that you think are important, and being able to accept defeat gracefully and not make enemies on those issues so you can bring them back later on. That's one of the things that I do. And I'll give you an example on that. Well, the very first initiative that I, the very first motion I made as a member of town council was a motion to bring back Sunday busing. When I joined town council, there was no buses on Sundays or holidays. And there was very little busing after like 11 o'clock at night. It was literally like Oakville closed at those times. And you couldn't get from, your kids couldn't get to where they wanted to go. Seniors couldn't get where they wanted to go. And most of all, people simply could not rely on public transit. So it was natural that everybody had two or more cars in their family. So the very first motion I made was on Sunday busing. And the town had cut out Sunday busing because there was this huge financial challenge that all municipalities had in the 80s, and they all cut costs to the bone, and the bus service was one of the ones that they cut dramatically in Oakville. So I came on, I said, okay, idealistic Jeff here is going to take on this issue that I feel strongly about. So I got my research together, I talked to the transit director, and he said, well, don't mention my name on this because I know council is really sensitive. I said, it's fine, I'm going to make the motion. They were very supportive because they have the customers that are upset at them that they're not providing the service. So I'm all ready. I got my notes. I'm at council. I've set up one of my colleagues to be the seconder to the motion so I can at least get it on the floor to talk about it. And I stand up and I'm so excited and I say, Madam Mayor, I have a motion and I would like to make this, and it's on Sunday busing. And she said, okay, you've got the, do you have a seconder? And I said, my colleague, councillor, will not give the name, leave it blank for now, is going to second the motion. And he just sort of sat there. And saying, oh my gosh. And I said, and she said, well, you don't have a seconder, the motion's out of order, because this was under new business where you can bring up new business. And I said, but is there anybody else who will second this? And everybody just sort of sat there stoically, like I had just committed heresy to dare bring back Sunday busing. And it was a huge defeat. I was so angry and I was so deflated. But it a couple of days later, I was right back on my horse again and pushing for it. So eventually I had to basically suck it up and take the second chair on the issue,
right?
Because the councillor, no names, said, I'll support a revision to this, and we developed something called zone busing. So these smaller little van type buses were the precursor to full buses on Sundays and holidays and after hours. So he said, I'll support that. And so we were able to do that. And we achieved, I ultimately was able to achieve the goal that I set out to achieve. I didn't get my name as the mover, I'm the seconder, but still it got the ball rolling. So I remained hopeful. I knew I'd see another day. I didn't make enemies out of everybody by getting angry at them. I was deeply disappointed myself, but it's that sense of, you know, if a good idea is worth doing, it's worth, you know, being tenacious about. It's worth pushing forward. It's worth, you know, sticking to your guns.
Well, it's great advice, and I think it's also just it's a great example of the impact that you can have and how little things make a big difference, which is what Face to Face, my podcast, is all about. Yeah. It's about those. How are you changing the world? We all are in some unique way, and so by asking some questions and by not backing down and coming back to the, you know, literally coming back to the microphone, I guess you had to do a fair bit of work, I guess, in between motion one and motion two.
Oh, a lot of work and a lot of cajoling.
I bet. But I think I love that. And tenacity, great word and a great skill.
There's a lot of stories like that.
I bet.
And that's, you know, whether it was the youth center was another one, pesticide ban I worked on. That actually took me two terms of council. It took a change of leadership at the council to get that one passed. It's sometimes you have to really, if you feel strongly about something and you've got the support. I mean, if you come up with an idea and your colleagues don't support it, the public are saying, "What the heck are you doing?" And even if you come home and your wife says you're crazy, that's never happened, by the way.
I doubt that, but
yeah, exactly. You know my wife, you know, if you can read the cues to say this is time to abandon this idea is just dumb, then, you know, that's one thing. But when you've got the public saying, you know what, stick to it. My son needs to be able to have a part-time job, and we don't have a car, and he needs to be able to get to work. You know, I'm sensitive to pesticides for cosmetic uses, and I don't want them blowing on my property, or, you know, any of the other things that I've worked on. The youth center, when I came to council in 2000, the staff were just frustrated beyond belief because they could not get a youth center approved because no counselor wanted to basically say to their constituents, there's going to be a youth center in your ward. They had, you know, meetings and public hearings, and every time they thought they had a place for it, they got shut down because the public were not understanding what the nature of the youth center was. The counselors were not reacting well at the time to the proposal of it being in the neighborhoods, and so it just never went anywhere. I sat down and met with then staff member Ray Chisholm, he's now a counselor, and said, how can I make this happen? He said, well, you know, I don't know because nobody wants it in their ward. So I said, well, let's find a place where it's not near any residences. And so that's, we found the one on, I actually went out and found the location myself on Cross Avenue across from the GO train station. It was there for, I don't know, 12 years. We've recently relocated it, but it was that kind of tenacity. Like I saw the work of the staff and some of the counselors and the repeated failures. And in this case, I had the public and I had the kids and I had churches and I had others saying, yeah, you go do it, get it done. And I remember the very day that, you know, I remember bringing it to committee. I had to go to committee first, and the staff member was very nervous because they'd already been shut down a couple of times. It's like, I'm just giving you an options report. I'm not making a recommendation. So I said, that's fine, I'll make the recommendation. So I came to council, and with me, I brought 75 teenagers with me and some parents and a couple of churches. And so you could see counselors of the day, none of whom are there now, but you could see counselors of the day getting really agitated because they know exactly what was coming. That now, you know, the potential customers are sitting there, not just the not in my backyard types, but actually the kids who need a place to be kids, to have a place where they can get support and where they can hang out in a safe environment with their peers. And we won.
Great.
And I got in big trouble after from my council colleagues who said, well, you really put us in a tough position. I said, well, that is what this job's all about.
Yeah,
sometimes you have to be in the tough positions to make the best decisions.
I mean, there's so many lessons to take away from that too. And I love your passion, Jeff. October 22nd, podcast is going to be published within the next 24, 36 hours for a variety of reasons, but obviously we want people to come out and vote. And are you a Taylor Swift fan, I think, is my final question. I mean, how many people has she, you know, I know it's U.S. politics, but I think there's something there as well, right? A couple people now, a million people now have registered.
Yeah.
New voters.
It is
get out and vote.
Yeah. It's surprising what a vote can do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And for the good or for the bad. And, you know, I cannot express how important municipal politics is enough that it should not just be left to the 30 to 35% of the people who normally vote.
Right.
The decisions we make affect the 18-year-olds and the 80-year-olds and everybody in between, and even sometimes the 96-year-olds. But the fact is that we touch more services and policies and issues that affect you.
Yeah, directly.
David Peck.
Yeah.
More directly than Mr. Trudeau does or Mr. Ford does. What we do every day, you see every day, you touch every day, you feel every day. And so being part of the decision on that process, to choose the governors of that process is really important. So I cannot stress strongly enough the importance of getting out and voting, getting involved in campaigns, running yourself potentially, not you necessarily, but some other people listening, and becoming part of the process.
Yeah, and getting involved.
Just right? Get involved.
Getting involved.
You don't have to run, but you could certainly, you know, walk a street with a candidate.
Think of the 1930s theater community-like themed metaphor.
Yeah.
I think is a really great place to start. Jeff, thanks a lot for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure.
I'm jeffknoll.ca, jeffknoll.ca. You
right.
can find out a whole lot more information about
and watch my videos
and watch your videos. There you go. That's thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, David.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.